Right now, we have agreed to put the tariffs on hold while we try to execute the framework.
The United States and China agree to a trade framework. It's Monday, May 21st. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, work continues to keep the Trump-Kim summit on track. The science of studying for Afghan women, Pakistan's women on wheels, songbirds teach speech, credit card skimmers. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States and China said Sunday they have agreed to back away from imposing tough new tariffs on each other's exports, a day after reaching an accord calling for Beijing to buy more American goods to substantially reduce the huge U.S. trade deficit with China.
We're putting the trade war on hold. So right now we have agreed to put the tariffs on hold while we try to execute the framework.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who told Fox News the world's two biggest economies have made very meaningful progress and agreed on a framework to resolve trade issues.
I'm pleased to report that we've made very meaningful progress and we agreed on a framework, which is important to understand. And the framework includes their agreement to substantially reduce the trade deficit by increasing their purchases of goods. We also discussed very important structural issues that they're going to make in their economy to make sure that we have a fair ability to compete there, and also protections about technology, which have been very important to the president.
China's state-run news agency Xinhua quoted Vice Premier Liu He, who led the Chinese negotiators in trade talks in Washington, as saying the two sides reached a consensus, will not fight a trade war, and will stop increasing tariffs on each other. Liu said the agreement was a necessity, but he added at the same time, it must be realized that unfreezing the ice cannot be done in a day. Solving the structural problems of the economic and trade relations between the two countries will take time. U.S. President Donald Trump had threatened to impose new tariffs on $150 billion worth of Chinese imports, and Beijing had responded that it would do the same on American goods. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype to Phil Levy. He's senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs.
It's not the worst outcome we could have had. It's the sort of mediocre outcome that some of us feared. The worst outcome would have been a tariff war. We've avoided that, and for that we should be thankful. This looks like they're opting for some sort of managed trade solution, which I don't think will do much for either country, but it is better than a tariff war.
Why do you think that China has agreed to make any movement whatsoever?
Well, it's not clear that this is a terribly big move on their part, and they avoided a real disruption to an important trade relationship, that there was a serious threat of a substantial raft of tariffs that were headed their way, and they've averted that threat.
So where does either side go from here, if anywhere?
I think that's part of the problem with the solution is, as far as we can tell, this looks like them saying, there, we fixed the problem, whereas the real underlying problems are not fixed. I think the Trump administration will crow about the fact that they've arranged for some additional sales. That wasn't really the issue. It may have been in their mind, but in terms of what's in the national interest, it wasn't.
What is?
I think there were serious concerns about a range of Chinese behavior. I think if you look at how China has handled intellectual property, how it has treated American investors, how it subsidizes some of its industries, and how it, you know, it gives a prominent role to state-owned enterprises, there are fundamental questions about how a state-dominated economy of that size fits into the global trading system, and I don't think we've answered those questions.
Why do you think the Trump administration has handled this the way it has?
I think they started off with two handicaps. First, there's the president's misunderstanding of the global economy, where he believes that bilateral trade deficits are a measure of how well we're doing. And second, there's the approach he's had where he has a lot of discordant voices all sort of empowered and speaking at once within the administration. So that kind of prevented them from thinking strategically, and it led them to feel satisfied about something which really doesn't do that much for the country.
Let me ask you about the ZTE situation. Where does that stand now? Is there any change in that with this Sunday announcement?
We've gotten kind of mixed signals about where that stands. It seems that the president has backed off from his tweeted statement that the Commerce Department should make everything right. On the other hand, we know it's still very important to the Chinese, and they had set it as something of a prerequisite for taking this set of meetings. So that remains to be seen in terms of how that's actually resolved. We also know that Congress has started to take a stand on this issue, which may well sort of constrain administration options.
Where do you think the U.S. should go from here?
I think the U.S. has to make a fundamental choice, which is, does it want to see China integrated into the global trading system, or does it want to somehow isolate China? I would strongly advocate the former, that it should be a push towards integration. If we're going to have that push towards integration, we need to get back to what Bob Zoellick once called sort of a responsible stakeholder role. What are the kind of behaviors that China needs to undertake to fit within the global trading system? And those are the questions that really need to be addressed. From the reports we've had of these talks, what's striking is they are not a new and more advanced approach to negotiating with the Chinese. If anything, it's something of a retrograde approach to dealing with the Chinese. That this has been what China has tried all along, was to offer a few additional purchases and hope that the Americans would be satisfied with that. Previous administrations were not. This administration seems to be.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Phil Levy, senior fellow in the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. United States and China back away from tariff war. Trump, Moon to discuss keeping U.S.-North Korean summit on track. In Malaysia, talk of reopening Mongolian model murder case. Concerns rise as WhatsApp becomes campaign tool in India. Anger at Norwegian plan to drill in Australian wilderness. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are always found on Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The leaders of the U.S. and South Korea have discussed ways to keep the upcoming U.S.-North Korea summit on track. During a 20-minute telephone conversation, Moon Jae-in and Donald Trump exchanged views about how best to deal with the seeming roadblocks the North has thrown into what would be historic talks between Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on June 12th in Singapore. The June meeting would be a first for the leaders of the two countries. A White House statement said the two leaders will continue their close coordination ahead of the Trump-Kim summit. Trump and Moon are scheduled to meet Tuesday in Washington. North Korea threatened last week to pull out of the June summit because of South Korea's ongoing military exercises with the United States, calling the exercises an invasion rehearsal. A North Korean official also called it, quote, absolutely absurd, to compare North Korea's nuclear program to that of Libya, an apparent reference made by White House National Security Advisor John Bolton, who suggested that when it comes to Pyongyang's denuclearization, what he has in mind is the Libya model, whereby dictator Muammar Gaddafi agreed to give up all his weapons of mass destruction in exchange for sanctions relief. Korea Society Senior Director Stephen Norper counseled patience, suggesting the North's motivation could be based on any number of reasons.
It could be a way of trying to appease reported hardliners and those who are engaging more. It could be Kim Jong-un's trying to get a better read of the tea leaves relative to the Americans and the South Koreans. It could be tactically a way of driving a further wedge between the United States and South Korea, because North Koreans can say that they acted in good faith. But again, I wouldn't overreact on the issue, because it is, while certainly a setback and certainly a challenge, not necessarily one that will result in the cancellation of the summit. I think we really do need to give it a little bit of time.
Aren't these joint drills something that are announced well in advance? This is not something that was a surprise to North Korea, was it?
Right, and it happened this time last year, so it takes place around Gwangju in the south, so it is not something that has any proximity to North Korea itself. But probably they felt that given the tone and tenor of recent meetings, the progress and the declaration at Panmunjom between the South Korean president and North Korean leader, that there would be acts of good faith. They probably argue that they're doing that with the proposed shutdown of the nuclear site, the dismantlement that's scheduled May 23rd to 5th. But we'll see whether they're trying to test that, whether they're sincerely irritated by the fact that such an exercise would take place.
Do you see any input by President Xi Jinping of China that would cause Kim Jong-un to make such a concern known publicly?
Well, it does appear that the North Koreans have very much sought Chinese counsel, and there have been a couple of meetings now, two within 40 days, between Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un. Clearly, the Chinese would be happy to see a downtick in exercises and eventually the withdrawal of U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula. But I think it's probably a bit much to think that there's a grander scheme at play here. I think it is probably best kept looking at whether or not they're trying to test the administration in Washington and see exactly what level of tolerance there might be on this. But they're going to push back, and there will be challenges along a very, very complex path of negotiation.
Stephen Norpers said if the North-South meeting is eventually rescheduled and the U.S.-North Korean summit preparations continue apace, this may just represent nothing more than Pyongyang testing the resolve of Washington. In addition, the North's Red Cross is now demanding the return of 12 North Korean restaurant workers who have been in the South since 2016. The North says the return of the women would demonstrate the South's willingness to improve relations with the North. The North has accused the South of abducting the women. The South, however, has said previously that it confirmed that the women's free will in resettling in the South. Happening now in Asia, a Pakistani exchange student is among the 10 people killed Friday in a shooting at Santa Fe High School in the state of Texas. Sabika Sheikh was to return home to Pakistan for the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. She had been studying in the United States since August 2017. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting out your week with us on VOA Asia. The United States is a land of opportunity for many immigrants, but some who come to the United States often face big hurdles. The challenges can be especially great for immigrant women trying to succeed in male-dominated careers in STEM fields for science, technology, engineering, and math. VOA spoke with three Afghan women, all of whom prove that where there is a will, there's usually a way. Shahila Nouri went to Silicon Valley to find out what drives them, Farshida Azizi narrates.
From war-weary Afghanistan to a refugee camp in Pakistan, Sophia Mahfouz has an unlikely story to tell. At seven, she moved to London with her family, where she developed an interest in science from her father, an electrical engineer. Today, she's a successful tech entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. Some find it hard to believe how far she's come.
They cannot put together this picture of this girl who is a refugee to being this entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. And so it's interesting the change in impression they get once I tell them that I'm actually Afghan.
She's not alone. Sarah Dakhik took a similar journey from Kabul to San Francisco, where she works as a software engineer for a leading data security firm. She's faced many challenges trying to succeed in the male-dominated cybersecurity field, but she has never met an obstacle she couldn't overcome.
Obviously, whatever you do, you face challenges, otherwise it's not worthwhile, right? For me, as a software engineer, I have had a lot of challenges, obviously, including things that wasn't pleasant for women at workplace. But I think the most important thing that I learned from those is that people shouldn't stop you from getting what you want.
Mara Nawabi agrees. She's part of an elite team of engineers at Lockheed Martin's Advanced Technology Center in Palo Alto, California. Besides saving lives with new satellite technology, the former Afghan refugee has won awards for mentoring other women.
One of them was the Silicon Valley Business Journal
women of influence, and that was they selected 100 women from Silicon Valley who were doing great work in their companies as well as what they were doing outside of their companies.
All three are actively involved in inspiring other young women and teaching them how to successfully navigate challenging careers. Mafu is for her work on Tech Women, a project-based leadership program for women. Nawabi for founding a lean-in circle for women in Palo Alto, California. And Daqiq, who uses her spare time teaching young girls how to code.
I'm very proud of that because I feel like women needs to be represented more in technology.
All three feel a responsibility to share what they have learned as immigrants and as women. Their overriding belief that neither gender, circumstance, or place of birth determines your path. It's how willing you are to prepare for it. For Gila Nuri, this is Freshta Azizi, VOA News.
Coming up, it's two powerful wheels for some Pakistani women. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, the Taliban has dismissed concerns its recent battlefield gains in western Afghanistan threaten security of a multi-billion dollar gas pipeline being laid through the area to link Central and South Asia. The project is planned to move natural gas from Turkmenistan through Afghanistan to Pakistan and India. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, part of a wave of women's empowerment programs, the government of Pakistan's Punjab province is running a campaign called Women on Wheels, a two-year-old program that trains women to ride motorcycles as a way to raise awareness of gender-based violence and street harassment. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on the excitement and independence the campaign has brought to participants.
Proudly perched on their brand new pink motorcycles, these new riders set out to challenge perceptions in Lahore, Pakistan's second biggest city after Karachi. Rider Nagina Wasim could barely contain her joy.
I am so excited because I am riding the bike right now, and this is my first experience. I am riding on the road.
She says her new riding skills will make a big difference for her and other women.
We becoming the independent and we can do everything which we want. Otherwise, we were dependent on another person.
Pakistani officials say they want to empower women to enter the labor market by helping them get from point A to point B. Recent studies show about 48% of Pakistani women do not hold paying jobs, mainly because of a lack of transport.
We are giving 3,000 bikes. We have trained over 3,500 girls in all of Punjab, and this is going to go on till we reach a target of around 10,000 plus.
Activist Nigat Dad, who praised the initiative, described it as an important step.
We have seen that women who have got their bikes and have got trainings and now they are on the roads and reclaiming these spaces. So it's a big, big win for women today in Punjab especially.
It's not uncommon to see women on motorcycles in Pakistan, but usually they are seated behind a male driver. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
News from VOA Asia, the wife of former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak has slammed police raids on their properties, saying they appear targeted at vilifying the family to provoke public anger. Osman Mansour said authorities conducting a corruption and money laundering investigation should avoid a, quote, premature public trial. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day, read, see, and hear top stories. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, scientists at Rockefeller University in New York discovered that the brains of songbirds use a similar process as humans do when learning to make sounds. And as a result, VOA's Deborah Block reports the research could lead to treatments for people with speech impediments.
The tiny brain of this zebra finch may help scientists answer questions on how people form words to talk. Like humans, songbirds learn to vocalize by imitation.
We're able to not only to study the mechanisms of how vocal learning works in these songbirds, but translate those findings to humans. And the reason why is because we discovered that songbirds and humans have what we call convergent brain pathways and genes that are specialized in them that you don't find in things like chicken.
Researchers from Rockefeller University in New York are using laser capture microscopy, a method of isolating cells from microscopic regions of tissues and cells, to get an in-depth look at the songbirds' brains. Those images are helping them understand how signals from the birds' brains are similar to the process humans use when learning to talk.
We find stuttering in songbirds. We can induce a Parkinson-like condition in them that causes stuttering. And then we can use that to figure out how to repair and then try to induce that in a brain like of humans to see if we can repair those circuits. We're also trying to figure out ways to engineer brain circuits in a species that doesn't have that ability to see if we can induce it or even enhance it. And if that works, we can actually try to translate that to humans as well.
Jarvis says it will take years before the findings may be used to treat human speech impediments.
I've had this hypothesis for the last 10 years of how to engineer these brain circuits and predict what kind of genes we would find that are specialized in the brain of humans and songbirds. It took us, let's say, 5 to 7 years to actually identify those genes. And I think it's going to take us another 5 to 7 years to actually figure out how to manipulate them.
Songbirds could provide a window to the origins of speech disorders caused by autism, strokes, and Parkinson's disease. Deborah Block, VOA News.
While hackers steal credit card numbers online, other crooks do it directly from the card, at the point where a consumer exchanges the data with a cash or banking machine. The U.S. Secret Service says those crooks, called skimmers, steal more than $1 billion annually. A group of students at the University of Florida is developing a device that may put a stop to this type of crime. We start with details from VOA's George Pudich.
Advanced credit cards have electronic chips, which are difficult to crack, but many of them also have magnetic strips, so they can be used on older card readers, usually in small stores and gas pumps. And that's where they get compromised.
Credit cards are read using something called a card reader or a read head. At any given time, only one read head should be present in a card slot.
Crooks simply attach their own card readers onto the existing ones, and when a customer inserts the credit card, the extra reader retrieves all the information needed to create a perfect copy. This type of crime is widespread, especially in large cities such as New York, where only 4 detectives are trained to spot extra readers attached to ATMs. Now, their task may become easier with a device called the Skim Reaper, invented by a group of students at the University of Florida, led by Professor Patrick Trainer.
We're glad to be able to produce something that will curb the tide.
The device consists of an electronic card, about twice as long as the regular credit card, attached to a box with a digital display. When inserted in the ATM slot, the digital display immediately reveals the presence of an extra card reader.
I'm impressed with their technology and their wit on how to come up with this machine to detect skimming devices.
The parts for the card reader detector cost about $50, but its inventors say they are trying to make it cheaper and smaller so that even untrained law enforcement officers can use it on a daily basis. George Pudich, VOA News.
We're happy that you were with us today. To listen to VOA Asia, you can find our program online. iTunes and SoundCloud is a great place to go, as well as VOA Asia Facebook for our program streaming each day. And, of course, our website, voanews.com. We're also heard on great radio stations around Asia, like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And if you happen to be there, say hi to the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station. We appreciate their help. We also appreciate our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.